a new Sefer. New Sefer, Sefer Tehillim. Sefer Tehillim is obviously quite a Sefer. I mean, my Hakdama, that's for sure. In our Mesira, we have 150 Mizmor. Each we don't call it really Pirakim, we call each section a separate Mizmor. There are different terms, that are used by I don't know, even Chazal and later commentators addressing how we referring to how we address, how we break up the different sections of Tanakh, whether it's Chumash, whether it's Nag, whether it's Ksuvim, and we generally use the word Pirakim, or we use the word Parshiyos. We use in Chumash, we have the 54 Parshiyos, Parshas Shavua. This really is the much, much more modern term, much more contemporary term. They say that on Shabbos we lay the Parshas HaShavua. The Parshas HaShavua this week is told us, and that includes a section which has in it many other Parshas, right? And we have in Chumash a Parsha Psucha, a Parsha Stuma. We have different ways to break up the Torah, the Chamisha Chumshe Torah, Parsha Psucha, Parsha Stuma. Parsha Psucha begins on a new line. The Parsha Stuma is where it begins at the end of a line after a break of nine letters. We always like to say that the Parsha Psucha is like a new chapter. The Parsha Stuma is like a new chapter. Parsha Stuma is a new paragraph. Now in Navi we have also parashos, a lot of parashos in Navi, so again also some of parashos psuchas, parashos stumais, but we come to, hey, then let's go even further, then we have a new way of breaking down the different sections into what is really the more modern day parakim. The more modern day parakim is something which we speak about many times, was really arranged by the Christians. And we mentioned many times there's an enormous amount of apikursis that appears in the way the parakim have been separated. And Mordechai, I hear you get a mazel tov. Mazel tov to you, a great grandson. Oh, this is mazel tov, but you're related. You're all related anyway. So I have mazel tov. Mazel tov. Okay, so we have over here. Mary, maybe you want to put out a message on the WhatsApp that it's not working. I have a little problem with the computer. I don't know. Maybe just let the computer charge. It's never happened before.
They shouldn't dial in either.
No, they can dial in. It's not going to make a difference. I'm going to have to reboot the whole thing in a moment. I have to give it some more power. Mark Hirschwitz is here. Okay, there's something wrong with the computer. I may have to reboot the computer in a few moments. We'll see. Let's see what happens. Mr. Hirschwitz, can you hear me? I'm not sure anyone can hear me. There's something.
I can't hear you. He's not going to answer the question.
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Shalom Aleichem. Okay. All right, we'll leave it for now. Maybe it's recovering. Could be there's just not enough power. All right.
And then we don't have this problem in Tehillim, right? Because they're
fine. Right. So in Tehillim is something that is totally unique to Tehillim. That's not, to the best of my knowledge, any other of the Chavdal Sifrei Tanakh, is the way the chapters are separated. Within a Mizmor itself, there is no breaks. Okay. So when you go and you look at any particular Mizmor, you're not going to see in the middle of a Mizmor, you're not going to see a break. You're not going to see a Parsha Psucha, Parsha Stuma. At the end of each Mizmor is automatically a Parsha Psucha. There's a pay, which means that the next Mizmor begins on a new line, the beginning of a new line, which does not give the Apikarsim, okay, any opportunity to tamper. What I'm trying to say is that Tehillim is pure. From all of the Chavdal at Sifrei Tanakh, the purest Sefer from the 24 is Tehillim. Because Tehillim is the only Sefer, to the best of my limited understanding, that was not tampered with.
Because it had Kapitlach before.
Exactly. Because now they're not called Kapitlach, they're called Mizmoirim. They're called each what we call Mizmoirim. A Kapitel, or you call a Perek, or you call a chapter. I'm not familiar with all the different terms, but each section is really called by Chazal a mizmor.
Right. Even though in Yiddish it's called a chapter.
Okay, it's okay, fine. That's not it. So we can call the kapitel. There's all different. There are different terms that are used. Some that are just minhagim. Some have been used by by the goyim.
What? The discussion there.
Okay, so parak aleph. Okay, fine. That's a discussion if it's one or two, and that would be enough to mean that when you write it to Hillel, would you put a chapter break between. The first and the second. Our tradition is, you're saying, making a very good point, that if really we hold that Aleph and Beis is called one Mizmar, also called, I think Tes and Yud is one Mizmar, then there should not be a pay. There should not be a chapter break. And the Nafkamina will be that when the person writes this, and you have over here a printed safe, you do whatever you want, but if you want to write it on parchment and cloth, then the proper way for it to have been written on parchment would be that it should not, Mizmor Bey should not begin on a separate line.
Do they write it on the clock?
You're asking a good question. What's the purpose? I don't know. I don't know. You go to the Kaisel Hamaravi, and you go to the Kaisel, you go to Wilson's Gate. You come to that little cave. There's a little cave. On the left side of the plaza, and you go. Everyone likes to go in there. It's nice. There's air conditioned and it's comfortable in there. People go to daven in there. So right when you walk in, and you go. I guess you go a little bit to the side, a little bit back. They have there on the side in a glass cage, acrylic type of cage, a tehillim on cloth with two atzei chayim, and you can say the tehillim. People, they like to take that tehillim, they like to go and take that space and say tehillim from cloth. Is there any mila? I don't know. I really don't know. Is there a mila? Now, it could very well be that years ago, before our time, Shabbos afternoon, the custom was to lain from kisuvim, just like we lay now from Torah in the morning, and then we lay in the haftarahs only from Nevi'im. There was a time when at Mincha, after they finished Mincha, they would lay in from Kisuvim. They lained like on the Haftarah almost, from Kisuvim. And there was a Seder, there was a selection from the Kisuvim that was lained Shabbos afternoon. So did they make a bracha? I don't know. Maybe they didn't make a bracha. I'm assuming that when they lained from the Kisuvim, they had to lain from a klaf that was written Kahalacha. Then you would need a tehillim that was written, if part of the selection that was written, that was said Shabbos afternoon at Mincha, was selected from tehillim, because tehillim is ksuvim, then it would need to be written on parchment kedas uchadin. This is not relevant today, because today we do not do this. This was bottled for different reasons. We do not lay from ksuvim Shabbos afternoon. Okay, but just go back to this important point I want to make, is that Tehillim from all of the Chofdal and Sifrei Tanakh is pure. It has not been tampered with. Again, because the Chofdal and Sifrei Tanakh, the Christians, somehow, some way, which is not, and it's hard to understand how they succeeded in doing this, was able to break up all of Tanakh into chapters. And the chapter breaks that they have inserted are clearly beyond a shadow of a doubt, not according to Chazal's understanding of the Pesukim. When you learn the Mefarshim, the basic Mefarshim on any one of the Chofdal at Sifrei Tanakh, and there's a chapter break, what is that chapter break doing there? It does not belong there. According to Rash, according to all the Rishonim, there is a discussion that is going on, and it's not the place to make a break. The breaks were made for us by the Mesorah, where there's a Parsha Pesucha and a Parsha Stuma. I think there are 275, I forgot the exact number, there are 200, and it's almost 300, and I think about it, I'm getting confused about what the exact number of chapters there are in Tanakh, in Chamishei Chumshei Torah. We have Parshiyos called the Sidra. Like we said, we divide the Torah into 54 large sections. We lay in every Shabbos what we call a Parsha. This week is Parshas Tolos. Last week was Parshas Chayesar. Next week will be Parshas Vayetze. These include many, many, a collection of many different sections. But in each section is a parsha psucha, parsha stuma. What we call perik zayin, perik chav beis, pasik this. Who made those perakim? Who made that order? That doesn't come from any Jewish source. That comes from Christian sources. And the more a person is knowledgeable about Christian theology, it's belated apikorsis. The reason why they tried to make to stop a section in any given location, anywhere in Tanakh, is because they're trying to make a statement to pervert the purity of what the psukim really mean and create their own narrative and their own agenda within the psukim. And we have a Mechol, he's very good at this, and every time we come to the chapter breaks in Mechol, once in a while, it's either obvious or a Mechol, he brings out an insight of in the Christian theology why they went and they put the break in this location. Somehow this has crept into our Sepharim, we've accepted it, and all the Gedolei Yisrael, when they refer to a pasuk, they're going to use these Christian chapter breaks. It's in Sefer Shmuel, even Shmuel out of Shmuel Beis. What's all that about? That you can say maybe it was a printer's innovation, because they couldn't put everything in one book, so they made Shmuel out of Shmuel Beis. But the chapters is clearly does not come from Jewish source, and this is consistent throughout the entire Tanakh. There's one exception. The one exception is Sefer Tehillim.
Because Aleph and
Shmuel Beis. That is not necessarily from the Christians. That was a printer's innovation. The printers could not print the entire Sefer Shmuel in one book. So they had no choice but to break it up into two parts.
Malachim,
same thing. Malachim Aleph and Malachim Beis. They broke it up into two different books. Yeah. But the breaks within each one,
originally they were
Mesach and Nezokin. It was called originally Mesach and Nezokin. They could not fit into one book, so they broke into three books. Bava Kamba, Mesi Bava Basher. But that could be have a Jewish flavor. That could be not put from the printers. Mesach the Kalim also. Mesach the Kalim is still one Mesach. I guess because we don't spend so much time on it, so we don't refer to it. There's also Bava Kamba, Mesi Bava Basher, Mesach the Kalim, 30 Parakim. It's a massive Mesachta. But when it comes to Tanakh, it's an incredible thing how they're the koyach of the goyim to pollute, to damage, to create an approach of apikorsis has crept into our holy sepharim, and there was an attempt made many years ago to create new chapter breaks. I told you the Korain Tanakh. If anyone has many shuls, they have the Korain Tanakh. Some of them are used by the Bima. The Gabbai Sheni, or the Gabbai, he is the official checker, and they use the Korain Tanakh, you know, to make sure everything, you know, the finals, because in our Chumashim, we have many different versions. If you have the Art School Chumash, and then you have another Chumash, and this Chumash, and that Chumash, you can have certain words, and different people, and different versions have different Nekudos. Different Nekudos. Is it Yoshfe or Yoshfei? Is it this week's parasha? Bishonoli, is it Ushakoli Bini, or is it a Chat of Patach, or is it a Shva? A Chat of Patach and a Shva are almost the same. You gotta be a real mumper like Rabbi Mayevsky to know the difference between the two. But is it Ushakoli Bini, or is it Ushaka? Ushakoli Bini, or is it Ushakoli Bini? So go look in the Chumash.
It's
every,
to help in the pronunciation. That's really
it's, if it's a chat of patach, so you have to do, if Moshe will be very mocked, but then you should say like a patach.
Right.
If you're going to have in your Chumash as a regular Shva, then it's Ushakol Ibni. And what do you do in Shul? What does the Baal Kriya do? So I know that a few times that I lane, I do whatever Roiv of the Tzibur has in front of them. If most of the Tzibur has in front of them the art scroll, do whatever it says in the art scroll. If it's good enough, that's... What are you looking for trouble? Is it the Koyvei Hashem Yachalifu Koyach? Or is it the Koyei Hashem Yachalifu Koyach? So you go look at the Chumash. Every Chumash will have a different girsa. There are many things like that. So there's you know, the Korain, for some reason they worked on this and they were machria what they felt was the ikar. Many Bavli Kinesios accepted their Chumash, especially the more modern shuls, to be the ikar, and that became the standard. And in that Chumash, they have two chapter breaks. They have the classic Christian chapter breaks, which is apicursis, and then they have a new, what? And the other, and on the other side, they have a new version of chapter breaks that were established by Talmidei Chachamim. I don't know exactly when this was. Maybe 100 years ago. There was a thrust. There was an attempt to do away with the apikursis of what we have in our Chumashim, and there was a new system that was established. I'm assuming by big Talmidei Chachamim, and they actually printed on the page of each one of every edition. There are many editions now of their. Of their Chumashim, and for some reason it just didn't take.
Yes, of course.
Now,
Koran did something,
yeah,
which Oskrol, I don't know if intentional or not. Koran originally developed the font.
They made their own font. You can buy it for
$67. You can't use that font without permission.
You can buy for $67.
Now, when they came out, everything was. There was no font.
They made their own font. They have a few fonts.
There was a font.
I can give you a link. I can give you a link where you can buy it.
Oskrol did the same thing.
Oskrol had a lot of their own innovations. They have a lot of...
The reason they did a font is because you can copyright a font. You can't copyright a Torah.
I understand. So they... Okay. So this is something which was done in attempt. It never took hold. The bottom line is, it's too late, too little, too late. All of us, and all Mefarshim, when they refer to Pasuk in Chumash, they're going to reuse the Christian chapter breaks. That's how it is. In most of us, we don't feel there's any damage because most of us, Baruch Hashem, have no clue. We don't spend any time studying the Christian theology, so it's totally meaningless to us. It means nothing to us. It's like in Eretz Yisrael, you see people on Purim get dressed up. A whole family will get dressed like Santa Claus. All the kids are dressed up like Santa Claus. Do you know what Santa, what are you, Meshuggah? You're getting all your 10 kids dressed up like Santa Claus. Are you out of your mind? They have no clue. I have no clue what Santa Claus is. They have no clue literally no clue. They're living in a different world. So therefore, all the kids get dressed like Santa Claus. They go in Mei Sharim. They go in Bnei Brak. They go with Shalach Manos. They go trick or treating. No one knows the difference.
He's referred to as Hasaba.
So no one has any clue what it is. So to us, when we look at these parakim, mm-hmm. and we look where the Nochash, how even the first parak, where the first parak of Chumash ends, it's blatant apikursis, what they try to do with the Nochash, what they try to do, and we're totally oblivious, Baruch Hashem, because we're living in Bnei Brak, getting dressed up like Santa Claus. We have no clue. So today for us, it really doesn't make any difference anyway, because again, we're clueless into what these things mean. However, those who know, they're really blown away. Wow, what this is the real deal. The real apikursis is just it leaps off the page. Because sometimes you come to some of the parakim, it's unbelievable how they want to close a section and then they can begin in the middle of nowhere. Oh, this pasuk refers to, according to their corrupt interpretation of Yashka, oh, you see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has replaced us with them and with their Mashiach. It's a perversion, it's a corruption, it's a contamination. The whole Tanakh, except for one Sefer. There's one Sefer that remains Tohar, and that is Sefer Tehillim. Because David HaMelech arranged each section as a complete Mizmar, and that's it. They were not able to break up the Mizmarim, into their own sections. Each Mizmar is the way it was originally. And that is something very refreshing. It's very refreshing to have in Tanakh a makar of Tahara from which you can rebuild.
Yeah. Okay? You know, it's interesting. It's ironic, really, that they had, many of them adopt the Tehillim for their service.
They adopt Tehillim for their service, and Tehillim is the only thing that they were not able to corrupt. It's ironic. He's saying very good. You know, every watch these or read these novels or these science fiction type of things where everything is destroyed, but in order to preserve the ability to rebuild, you take a mashahu, a subject that's pure, and you put it away. You put it into a time capsule, you send to outer space, that if the day will come when the world will be rebuilt, we have here the pure DNA from which we can rebuild what has been destroyed and contaminated. Tehillim from the entire Tanakh is the only thing that has not been contaminated by the Christians. And thus, Tehillim is the pure, the Tahara, from which will spread to be Mitaher the entire Tanakh. It's the Koyach of Tehillim is, this Koyach is what brings back to life the entire. So we're learning a Sefer that's Mamish Tohar. It's Tohar, the Kadosh, there's no influence. The Parshiyos, or what we call the Mizmoirim, we don't call them Parshiyos, we don't call, for what? So even kapitlach is not necessarily the correct term. I mean, okay, we say, you can say whatever you want to say. We say perek, kapitl, whatever you want to say. But the words of Chazal, I think Chazal, when they refer to the different sections in Tehillim, they say mizmar. And when they refer to different sections in Tanakh, the rest they say a parsha, this parsha. Why is this parsha, Svayhi bin Tzor, surrounded by upside downs? Why is this parsha stuma? Why is this parsha psucha? They use the term parsha. Now we, in our vernacular, use the word parsha. Parsha's toldos, parsha's vayetze, parsha's chayesara. That's called the seder. That the correct term for what we call a parsha is called the sidra. We have a seder. We go through the entire Tanakh in 1 year. There is the sidra, and each week we read a section of Tanakh that's called the Seder. So we call it, everything that we say is corrupt. We call it a parsha. It's not really called a parsha, it's called the sidra. The sidra is a play on the word the Seder. It's part of the arrangement for the entire year. Each section within the parsha is either a parsha psucha or a parsha stuma. Tehillim, and then there's what we call a perek. A perek is really a chapter, is really referring to the Christians. And because I think we don't want to give them any credit, we say a kapitel. We don't want to use the word perek, because that is some reason, I don't know what this means. I remember someone trying to explain this to me. You don't say perek, someone said a rebbe. I know, a kid, a rebbe, a chassidish rebbe. I heard he passed away, this rebbe. He was really a substitute. And I remember he was teaching us nach, and he was telling us, he was like, very aggravated that someone should say the word parrot. I think these memories. No, you don't call a parrot in Nach, you don't call it a parrot, it's a kapitel. And he explained to us why. I don't remember, something with the Christians.
I think it may be because of the Latin. In the King James Version, they use the Latin is something like that, right? It's probably that.
It's like he got very disturbed. Very disturbed with the word parak, and he called it a kapitel. Okay, I'm not, I'm fluent with all of these things, but one thing that we know, our yesoid is a haradama, is Tehillim. These are mizmoirim, psalms, mizmoirim. They're not parakim, they're not part of the sidra, they're not parashios, the mizmoirim, and they're pure. They're pure. The Christians were not able to put their poison that inflict any harm and damage, and dover shohi bichlau, the yotza menachlau lelamed, loy lelamel atzma yotza, edla lelamed al kolakal kuli yotza. Tehillim preserves the integrity, the tahara of the entire Chof Dalet Sifrei Tanakh. Okay, that's one yisoid, one piece of introduction for Tehillim. Another thing about Tehillim, which comes out of many of the Mefarshim, is that Tehillim is David's connection to Moshe Rabbeinu. This comes out again and again, over and over. We look at all the introductions. David is somehow competing with Moshe. That's not a nice word. He's not competing with Moshe. He's attaching himself to Moshe. He is following in his ways. There are an enormous number of parallels. It's not necessarily a parallel. On the one hand, it's a parallel. On the other hand, it's competition. On the other hand, he's coming to fill in the missing gaps. Whatever Moshe Rabbeinu left out, here I am, David. I'm gonna fill in what you Moshe Rabbeinu left out in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And why do I say that? Just the Rashi.
Did Moshe Rabbeinu write any of the Mishmar?
Yes. So that's gonna be the first Rashi. The first Rashi is gonna tell us there are gonna be 10 different. There are really 10 contributors. There are 10 contributors to Tehillim. Okay, we'll come across that at some point in time. Ten, the Tehillim is not only David HaMelech. David HaMelech composed the vast majority. Who? David? Yes, Bukhari, David. I'm not even sure, but Bukhari, yeah. But David HaMelech, he compiled. David HaMelech compiled, he took from others, okay, he took from others, and he put together a compilation. This is a Likut. You know, they talk about the Likutim. Today, you know, they don't. Today, when the publishers say, for the first question is this original or is this a Likut? Today, with Yitzra Chachma, today 99% of what they print new Svarim is just a Likut. It's just a collection. Someone's good with the computer, and they take from the hundreds of thousands. I don't know. They take from whatever is available from the time of printing, and they find chidushim and they rewrite it. They rewrite it, they rearrange it, they reorganize it, and they put in a beautiful cover and beautiful paper and beautiful print and make it very, very Baruch Hashem. Lahagdil Torah Lahadira. But it's not so common to find original chidushin. David HaMelech was a Malachit. It's David HaMelech, he didn't just print, he did not just publish his own tefilos, his own tehilos praises. David HaMelech, he compiled from his predecessors, from Adam HaRishon, from Moshe Rabbeinu, from different people that we'll see. We'll go through the Medrash, we'll tell us all different people that contributed to Sefer Tehillim. I remember the details, I was in college taking a core course by Rabbi Dr. Schneer Lyman. He was the professor. He's a world renowned.
Can you get him to give us
a... You have to, whatever. So he was teaching a book in college then. He was teaching a core course. There must have been the class at least 100 students, and he was saying, you know, and many of these students were. He was saying big chidushim. He was saying stuff that you would say have no problem saying in Lakewood, in the Beis Medrash in Lakewood, and he was just saying it in just very secular terms, on a very, very simple level to a class of African Americans and Russians, and they didn't have in those days too many Pakistanians in those days, but the Chinese, a whole class, and he was saying incredible stuff. And when he was saying the really good chidushim, he would look right at the firm guys. And he would say, he was like saying like heavy chidushim. And I don't remember exactly, I mean, on a slideshow, he was talking about Tehillim, and he was showing that a mizmar in Tehillim was really written way before David. And he actually found, they found a stone, they found some type of stones, and it was etched in the word of the stone, a pasuk that's in Tehillim, which was before David. I mean, I don't know how he make these calculations, and he was trying to show that Tehillim was a compilation, which really is what it says in Chazal. It says in Chazal. Now, in those days, you understand the standards of plagiarism were completely different world. It wasn't like today. If you say one sentence, when someone in the President of the United States, or anyone, makes a speech, any speech that someone makes today, the first second, the speech is put into Copyscape or other programs like that, and 1 second they will tell you who did the speech writer plagiarize from. They will tell you every single speech that was there in a second. They write it, you take the whole speech, you put it into a program, it tells you every single, if there are a couple of words that are a sentence or even a phrase that someone else already said at some event. Oh, look at this, plagiarism. The speech here was lifted from another president. They showed with the first lady, I think when Trump, his wife spoke somewhere.
Biden or the... Biden was accused of
plagiarism. Biden, that's an old story. Biden is an old story.
Melania Trump.
Remember, right? So she didn't write her speech. She had a speech writer. So the speech writer, it was basically two same words. So they, well, what's going on over here? You can't get away with it today. And right away, you have to give credit where credit is due. Years ago in Chazal, it wasn't like that. People copied, and for some reason, credit was not attributed. Why? Maybe it was super obvious, maybe it was self-understood. It's the public domain, I do not know. The Chofetz Chaim does this. There are chunks, massive chunks of Mishneh Berurah that's word for word from the Baal HaTanya. from the Shulchan Aruch Harav, word for word. And he doesn't say where it's from. He doesn't say where he got it from. A whole chunk. So how did that happen? So it was either self-understood. It was self-understood. He's like, Chavetz Chaim is not coming to steal. I mean, there are other examples like this. David HaMelech, there are chunks of, it doesn't say who wrote David, who wrote Sefer Tehillim. It doesn't say, obviously, David HaMelech, much of this is about David HaMelech's life, and there are many Midrashim, but there are definitely chunks of Tehillim that have come from other people. But besides that, that was a tangent, is David HaMelech, the main thrust of Tehillim, who comes out very often, is a response to Moshe Rabbeinu in many dimensions. It's a hashlam. What Moshe Rabbeinu was unable to achieve, to fulfill, here I am, David, I'm going to be mashlim what Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to fulfill, was not able to express in his life. What Moshe finished, that's where I stop. What Moshe accomplished for the tzibur, I'm going to mirror for the yochid. What Moshe Rabbeinu did, I'm going to do. I'm also going to do in a different generation. There are striking parallels in the work of David to connect himself to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Chazal say this. And just as a hagdama, the first word, this is a very beautiful verse, the first word of Tehillim is Ashrei. Why does David HaMelech begin Tehillim with the word Ashrei for Ish? Why Ashrei? What was the last thing Moshe Rabbeinu said? And the last eight psukim is not really part of Moshe Rabbeinu's story. That's a record of that Moshe Rabbeinu. The eight psukim was written. Bedema Hashem composed those words to describe the historical fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, he died in Har Nevo. But one of the last, the Shira, the Zois HaBrocha Sheberach Moshe, Esbnei Yisrael, what's the last pasuk of the Shira? Ashrecha Yisrael Micha Moicha. Am Noisha BaHashem, Bogein Yisrecha. The last pasuk of Moshe Rabbeinu's work, the last pasuk, is Ashrecha Yisrael. Where does David, that's Moshe's Gemar. Where does David start? Ashrei HaIsh. David is picking up where he left off. Isn't there, maybe you can remember this, is that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, of Menachem Mendel, so when he became the Rebbe, there was a gap after his father-in-law passed away, the Riatz. After he passed away, there was a gap of a year when there was no Rebbe. There was no Rebbe, period. That's a fact. Okay, no one can tell you otherwise. There was no Rebbe, and there was a very big, there was a lot of turmoil. What was going to be? Who says they were even continuing the Lubavitch? It was a very, very delicate situation in America at that time. There weren't too many Hasidim. Most of the Hasidim were not even Shomer Shabbos. And who was going to be the Rebbe? There was Gur Ari, a whole story. And the end was, after a lot of things that happened, he became the Rebbe. And how did he? And when he became the Rebbe, the first Sicha he gave, this is like very famous. He began his sicha with the last Bossi Lagani. Bossi Lagani. He began his Malchus, his first sicha, with the same theme of his father-in-law's last sicha. The last maimer, the last famous thing that his father-in-law gave over was Bossi Lagani. And that's how he began his Malchus, with Bossi Lagani. And this became Lubavitch a very big thing. That the Rebbe, it's a very clever thing what he did. It's like he's being mamshich. Where did the Rebbe get that from? He got it from David. Because David did exactly the same thing. Moshe Rabbeinu concluded with Ashrecha Yisrael Micha Moicha. David HaMelech begins with Ashrei HaIsh. David HaMelech is continuing where Moshe Rabbeinu left off. Then one respect. In another respect, the pasuk Ashrecha Yisrael is for the tzibur, is for the entire Klal Yisrael. David's work of Tehillim is focused on the Yochid. Ashrei HaIsh. The Moshe is Ashrecha Yisrael, and this is the Ish. So, okay, there's another very obvious parallel, and all of the Hakdamos discuss this, is that Tehillim is divided into five books. There are Chamisha Chumshe Tehillim. Why? To parallel the Chamisha Chumshe Torah. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah is five books, so too Tehillim is divided into five books in the eyes of Chazal. Why five? Obviously, there's a parallel between David and Moshe. Now, I want to say something a little bit different. Is it's not just what's the number five? Is the number five a significant number in Chazal? So, of course, Chamisha Chumshe Torah. Really? Is that really significant? You'll say seven. The world was created in 7 days. That's obviously seemingly much more significant than the number five. If Hashem created the world in 7 days, we have 7 days of the week.
Could be more than five.
So right, Vayihi bin Soya Ha'arai, we said that they really said Chavtza Amudeha Shiva. Hashem quarried its pillars seven. So what does that mean? There are seven branches of the menorah. And with the parasha of Vayihi bin Soya Ha'arai, that is considered to be a parasha bifnei atzma. There are inverted nuns. So everything the chumash by midbar until Vayihi bin Soya is one chumash. Vayihi bin Soya is a separate chumash. Vayihi bin Soya is a third chumash. So there are three chumashim in that midbar plus the other four for a grand total of seven. So the number seven really is really a much, much more significant number than the number five. What's five? Agudasel Eretz Yasta. There are five digits on the thing, on the person's hand. But the truth is there are two hands, which means there are ten digits. In the luchas, there are two luchas, so the aseres hadibros. And Chazal say biasara ma'amorois nivra ha'olam. And there are aseres hadibros. And last week's parasha, Eliezer gave to Rivka the bracelet, which was asara zohav mishkolam. Merame is on the aseres hadibros. It doesn't say anywhere the number five. Five is not as significant as the number seven and as the number ten. So I want to suggest is that being that we find that David, there is this very strong connection between David and Moshe in regard to what they're trying to accomplish with their sefarim. It's not just that, he has five, I have five. The goal is 10. The goal is 5 plus 5 equals 10. This is the hashlama. I'm not trying to go copy Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, I'm going to have 5. There is no such, there is not much significance in the number 5. The significance is in the number 10. And therefore, these 5 is the hashlama to bring the Torah, the Chamishe Chumshe Torah, up to the Asara Be'asara Ma'amoros Nivra Olam to 10. It's you put together five. I'll give you another example of this idea.
It's very interesting because Tehillim is not even Nach, it's Ksuvim.
Yeah. So it's okay. There are different dimensions. I'll give you another example. This is a little bit wild, this idea. Pesach, we're obsessed with the number four. Right? We're obsessed. There are four Kaisas, there are four Lashonis of Geula. There are four times. I don't remember all the four. Everyone knows the number four. For Abar Banim, go on and on and on. The number four. You can give a list of 20 things. I can't even remember five of them. But you can go live with a list of 20 things at number four. Now, if you learn Masechta Yoma, you come across that on Yom Kippur there are also four. Four. They're on the coin. God only wears the four begadim. The coin God goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Four times.
Excuse me. Five times.
No, excuse me. Four times. You could change his clothing for them. Yes, yes.
Okay, how much else you have four? Okay, how much in Pirkei? You have it goes from 10 to 4.
In Pirkei?
The counting now. In Pirkei, how much?
Yes.
In the fifth parak, the Mishnah is listing orders of things. I saw this.
10
and then suddenly it skips 5, 7, it goes straight to 4.
5, 7. I'm not familiar. Not enough. I'm sure I understand. Okay, but
in southern Iraq, there are Christians who speak Aramaic. It's
right.
Called Mandaic. M-A-N-D-A-I-C.
Chaldean Christians.
What?
The Chaldean Christians.
Yes, they pronounce the word in English letters Y-U-M-A, Yuma.
Okay, okay, that's a separate topic. Yuma, okay. Is it Yoma or Yuma? The Yeshivish way, I know, this, I call, you taught this to me. Okay, okay, there's a whole other Tasha, okay, so Yuma, Masech to Yuma. So, so I once came across an idea. This idea is.
They went into the Ordin Kodesh twice. He went in. No?
They went in for the Dama Par, the Dama Soir. They went in for the Ketores and to retrieve the Machta, to retrieve the Machta four times. The Dama Par is number one. Dama Soir is number two. The Macht, the Ketores. The first time he went in was for the Ketores, and the fourth time he went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim was to retrieve the shovel and the bowl of the Ketores. The Kohen Gadol went to the Kodesh HaKadosh on Yom HaKippurim four times. Four times. There are many, many fours in Yom HaKippurim. So I once came across a Mefarish that explained Pesach and Yom Kippur are connected. And the reason why in Pesach there's four and Yom Kippur there's four is not because four has any significance, it's because the number eight has significance. This, how do you know the number eight has significance? Uvayoyim ha-shmini. Shmini, you have bris mila is shmini. We have shmini atzeres. The Torah gives a lot of significance to the number. And the Torah does not give any significance to number four. Where do you find in the Torah the number four? Nowhere. You find it, there were four kings and five kings. I mean, that's not, where do you find? But it doesn't say the number there, number four. It doesn't express the number four. Where does the Torah say the number eight with significance? Bris Mila, Uvayoyim Hashmini Yimol. We have Shmini Atzeres, Vayoyim Hashmini Atzeres Tielochem. There is a
connection.
Bayom Hashmini Vaholo Yerotz. Excellent. Right, by Karbonos. The Torah specifies Pesach. Where do you find it? Why Pesach? We find an obsession with four on Pesach, an obsession with four on Yom Kippur. It's not because the number four is any significant. It's to connect the bond, the two fours combined together to achieve the number eight. Chazal said that when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadosh Yom Kippurim, the linen. That he was used to make his garments when he went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim came from Egypt, came from Mitzrayim. They didn't take Israeli made linen. The linen was taken from Egypt. It's the Hashlama, it's Yitzias Mitzrayim. We left Mitzrayim. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in order to bring us here to Eretz Yisrael. L'chaper al kol, you say this in the Dayenu. Dayenu. And after we finish all the Dayenus, what do? We summarize the entire thing and we add one more expression that's not part of the Dayenus. L'chaper al kol chatoisenu. In the Dayenus, go one after the other, and then we summarize it. The whole is greater than its parts. The sum of the whole is greater than its parts. L'chaper al chatoisenu. What's that? That's Yom HaKippurim, when you go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's not the four, it's each part is part of a larger piece. There is four on Pesach, and there's four on Yom Kippur. The two fours go together to create the number eight. Okay, I'm not delving into this, but the point, the only borrowing from that concept is, there is an obvious connection between David and Moshe. David is obsessed with Moshe Rabbeinu. David's coming to be Mashlem. He's coming to copy. He's coming to connect. He's coming to compete. You have all the different words you can use. David is connecting to Moshe Rabbeinu in many dimensions. The first word, Ashrei Ho'ish, where you left off Moshe, that's where I'm continuing. Ashrecha Yisrael, that's for the Tzibur. What about the Yachid? Ashrei Ho'ish. Your Sefer is five. There are Hamishei Chum Shei Torah. What's the number five all about? The number 10 is what counts. The Aseres HaDibros, Aseres HaDivarim. It says in the Torah the word Aseres HaDivarim. The Aseres HaDivarim. So Moshe, you didn't finish. I'm going to get you, Moshe, to the finish line. You have your five books. I'm going to add another five books. And together, we have 10 books. Because we need to get to the number 10. The Aseres HaMoros Nivre HaOlam. Aseres HaDibros. Those are the two key things. There is the physical world that came into this world through 10 utterances, And there's the spiritual components of the world which came to this world through the Aseres HaDibros. There's the physical, the spiritual is 10. And that physical and spiritual is captured in the Torah HaKadosha. Moshe, he left this world prematurely. V'eschanan al Hashem. Hashem, I want to go into Eretz Yisrael. No, Moshe, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. You're not going. You're staying right here. You're going to die in the Midbar. So who's going to go into Eretz Yisrael and lead Klal Yisrael and build the Beis HaMikdash? David. David almost succeeded. I mean, he came, he built the foundation. David, really, it wasn't Yoshua. It wasn't a Shoiftim. It wasn't Shmuel. It wasn't Shaul. Who was the one that really, in essence, finished the job for Moshe Rabbeinu? The one that really did what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to achieve? It was David.
So why you say Sukkot?
The Telem is also divided into Yemei HaShavuot.
Okay, that's a new thing. That's
so
a binding. That's non-Chazal. The seventh thing is something that we invented in order to make it easy to say Telem every single day.
Divided into 30 also.
It's divided into 30, divided into days of the year. There are many, many ways, many different new things that have come along in order to make it easy to facilitate the setting of Tehillim in an orderly way to say Tehillim. But in Chazals, the only thing Chazals say about Tehillim are the Chamish Asar. That's a Chazal. Chazal don't talk about 7 books, they don't talk about 30 books, they talk about 5 books. Why 5 books? It's not just, it's too simplistic to say, oh, because just like Moshe Rabbeinu made 5, I'm also going to make 5. Yeah, that's very nice. They told you that in third grade, right? David and Moshe made 5, the Chani Shechum Shei Torah. So when David makes a book, I'm also going to make 5, the Chani, I'm going to make 5. Okay, that's MS, but there's something much deeper. And that is, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to come into Eretz Yisrael. He took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. He was there on the border. He wanted to come. Hashem said, no, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. Who, in essence, was Mashlim, did the Hashlama? Yoshua? You can't say it was Yoshua. Yeshua didn't build the Beis HaMikdash. Yeshua just took Moshe Rabbeinu's Mishkan. He brought it to the other side of the Yarden. And they fought. They conquered the land. It wasn't a complete conquest. It was David that carried on. It was David that actually fulfilled what it says, L'shichnoi sidrishu uvasa shama. El hamoka masha yifchar. Yoshua did not achieve to find the permanent resting place of El hamokaim asher, the possible where Hashem said, I'm going to select the mokaim where the shul is going to rest permanently. Yoshua. Yoshua did not succeed. The one that succeeded in selecting the makom of the permanent Hashua Sashkina, the Klal Yisrael, to put in that makom the Orin of Moitar Asmaish and the Luchos, the permanent resting place, was David. It was David. David bought the land of Maravna Hayavusi. David achieved this. David, he built the foundation. The Mesorah is, and the Kaisal HaMaravi, if you go all the way down, okay, to the very, very, very bottom, which is totally covered up, you get how it goes all the way down, the foundation of the Kaisal HaMaravi that we have today was built by David himself. David himself, his bare hands, laid the foundation. That's the Mesorah. What?
You say that?
That's the Mesorah. There's a Mesorah.
That Beis HaMikdash, the Seidus that David built,
yeah,
much smaller than.
No, it's not. The Yerushalayim, that's the walls of Yerushalayim, were much, much smaller. The walls of Yerushalayim.
No, even the Beis HaMikdash,
the Azara, no.
Much bigger.
Hordis expanded the Har HaBayis.
Right.
He expanded the Azara. He didn't expand, he did not. Hordis expanded the Har HaBayis in one direction. He expanded it towards.
He did not expand in all directions.
He expanded it primarily in one direction. The Kaislam to the left. Which direction is the left? If this is the west. So if that is the west.
In the tunnel,
south,
if you go
south.
To the left, you actually hit the bedrock.
Hordis expanded it. If you're facing, by the way, you have the coastal plaza, and you're facing the coastal Hamaravi. Hordis expanded, double the size of the Har HaBayis to the left.
The south, but the left is north.
But he left,
left,
right?
Left is south.
Yes.
Are you starting here?
Right now, this is Hagdama. This is our Hagdama. We're right now, we're giving Hagdama. Okay, we're giving Hagdama as a little bit of Hagdama. So, okay, so these are, okay, we've got already a few ideas.
The Kodesh HaKadoshim was facing, it was west.
The Kodesh HaKadoshim, when we go to the Coastal Plaza, we are behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We are facing east. We are facing east. When we stand by the Coastal HaMaravi, we're facing east. We're facing the back of the back of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right in front of us is the end of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was in the west. That's why it's called the Kodesh HaMa'aravi. It's the west side. So therefore, if this is, I'm getting all confused. My must be so simple. If this is the west and that is the east, so therefore the south is.
That's the west,
no,
the east,
the
south,
the west,
is
the
right. That's where the Kodesh
Kedoshim
is. And the south is where the
Harabai is. So he heard this expanded though, but this is a Masorah. You're not going to find it. This all is a Masorah. I once tried to check it. Where does it say this? It's nothing more. There's a tradition that by the Kodesh HaMaravi, on the very, very bottom, all the stones, there are new stones. They were built, they were put there new. From the time of the Bayis Sheni, from the time much later, there were many different, they could actually identify every single stone at what era in Jewish history all of the stones were put. Every era, different periods of time, there's nothing left from the time of the Bayis Rishon, nothing. But there is a Mesorah that underneath the stones, the foundation was laid, at least in that section, by David HaMelech. And therefore, David HaMelech, in essence, is being mashlim what Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to do. When Moshe wanted for Eschanana Lashem or Esahi Lemar, I dive into Hashem. Who was the one? Who was the big Shliach Tzibur of Klal Yisrael? The Shliach Tzibur of Klal Yisrael is David HaMelech. That is something which all the Mepharshim said. David HaMelech, he is the Neshama of Klal Yisrael. He is the Shliach Tzibur. His words are the words that every single person connects to when they need to dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we dive in Sukkot Zimra, we dive in various parts of the davening, we connect, we take the words of David HaMelech. He is the Shliach Tzibur. He is the embodiment of Vo'eschanan El Hashem Vo'esahi Lemar. I desperately want to go into Eretz Yisrael and achieve my mission. Hashem said, Moshe, you cannot. Who ended up doing what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to do? David HaMelech. That's why David's entire essence is Vo'eschanan El Hashem. David's work of Tehillim is not just to copy Moshe Rabbeinu. It's to be mashlin Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe wrote 5 books. I'm writing the next 5 to bring it to the number of 10. To bring it to the shleimus of 10 of the Asar Mamoros and the Aseres Hadibros.
One second, there are 5 books of Moses. That's very well known, very popular.
Okay.
Well, where is the 5 books?
The 5 books. So we'll read. We're gonna read it. I'll read it for you. We're gonna read it. It's in the Iker.
It's hidden anyway.
No, it's not. Only it's very popular. There are 5 books of Tehillim.
I don't see any breakdown.
Okay, I'll believe that when we come to it.
There are five.
It's a Chazal. The only Chazal say is the 5 books. Where are the words? So before we leave today, I'll find it for you before we go today. There are 5 books of Tehillim. It's a Chazal, and
And there is divided into 6 days.
Sorry.
6 days.
So I said those are new modern conventions that were done in order to make it easy to say Tehillim every single day. The article, they make it sound like the 6 days or 7 days or 30 days. This is Misinai. No. The only thing that's Misinai is 5. There are 5 books of Tehillim. Okay, I have it over here. I know actually I have it over here. I will believe that we'll go into this more. But okay, now there's another note of introduction. By the way, in this edition, I don't think there's ever been an edition of Tehillim like this. Okay, our scroll, they did a work like none other. It's really, really remarkable. It's beyond belief. No one would even believe this. Go back 25 years, someone will tell you there's something like you can get a sefer like this for $20, who'd believe you? It's just this is in every single way. It's literally beyond belief what they put into this volume for $20. It's beyond belief. It's a little beyond belief. If you go to Barnes and Nobles and buy a book like this, it would cost you $500. The amount of work, the amount of effort, and how they put this together, what they have here, it's not to be believed, literally. And one of the beautiful things they have here hakdamas. They have here printed all of the hakdamas from the Radak, the hakdama from the Mincha Shai, from the Maldim, and from Moore, from Wolf. Rav Wolf, I have a tongue twister for me. Hildenheim. Okay, so you have over here you have these hakdams. Some of these hakdams are just breathtaking. The one that I spend all time on, I didn't look at these, is the hakdama from the Mamloes. I'm telling you, Rabbi Yisai, it is just unreal. The hakdama from the Mamloes, what he says there in the hakdama, how he puts together all the different Mamari Chazal in simple language. We really should learn it inside word for word. Maybe we will at one point, but the Hakdama of the Mamloes to Tehillim is really a work of art. And he brings out all of the basic Yesodos of Tehillim, how it all comes together. All right. What else did I want to say about Tehillim? Okay, now the first Mizmar, according to many of the commentators, is really David's introduction to Tehillim. According to many commentators, the Tehillim really begins with Mizmar, what we call Mizmar Beis, the second Mizmar. Lama Rog Shugoy. Mizmar Beis is describes Yisurim. It describes Tzadik Viraloi. And that's the opening of Tehillim. Mizmar Aleph is David's Hakdama. David did not want to rely upon the Mamloes. David did not want to rely upon the Malbim. He didn't want to rely upon other commentators. David wanted to give you his own Hakdama. Mizmar Aleph, in essence, summarizes the entire Tehillim. And what it basically says is, the person who is a Yarei Shemayim and goes in Hashem's ways, he will merit the ultimate reward, the ultimate satisfaction, the ultimate pleasure of the Misanig in Hashem. And the Rasha, who does everything in his, who lives a life of evil and tries to cause other people pain for his own agenda, at the end, he will be pulverized, will be crushed, he'll be destroyed. And that's really the whole Tehillim. The whole Tehillim is, many chapters of Tehillim, they fall into one of these two categories. It's either David, in this frustration, is praying to Hashem to obliterate to smithereens his enemies, or to the enemies of Klal Yisrael. And there are other mizmarim where David is giving shevach v'hoidah to Hashem for his success in different dimensions of his life, which is basically describing the Ashrei Ho'ish. Praiseworthy, fortune is the man Asher lo yholach batzas rishon. But instead, he went in Hashem's ways and he's established in this world and he merits to actually see the peros of his tree that he planted. Mizmor Aleph is the hakdama to the entire Sefer of Tehillim. That's in essence what it is.
So we're gonna go through it.
Okay, we are right. Okay. Well, now another. Once we're already giving, I didn't really plan to give such a long hakdama. I want to really go into the sefer, but once we're ready to do that, let me just finish up a few more short things. Chazal say kol oimer tehila leDavid b'chol yoim. This is a very famous Chazal that's cited when you learn Tehillim. Anyone that says Tehila leDavid b'chol yoim is muftach shizeh ben olam haba. What is the simple meaning of these words? Someone who says Ashrei.
Yeah.
We say Ashrei three times a day. And why three times this? I saw written, I can't remember who says this, is this because since many people they are very distracted. Hopefully that if you say it three times a day, you'll at least end up saying it at least once. Okay? So if you come late for davening, at least you'll say Ashrei Volitzian. If you miss Shacharis, whatever, you'll say by Mincha. If you don't come to Mincha, so at least you said it by Shacharis. Or even though Baruch Hashem, everyone says it, but unfortunately we have a tendency to say it just as the mitzvah sanoshim with a lip service. Maybe once a day you'll be able to put yourself together and concentrate on the mizmar of what we call Tehila LeDavid, Adavimcha Elokai HaMelech, what we call Ashrei. Ashrei Yashrei Veisecha Od Yahaluch Asela, which is introduced with the words Tehila LeDavid. That is the simple meaning of this Maimon Chazal, that if a person who says at least once a day what we call in our vernacular Ashrei, if we'll say once a day, oh, Muvtach Lo Shehu Ben Olam Haba. Why is Ashrei so special? So Chazal tells us why it's so special, because it's arranged according to the letters of the Aleph base, which encompass Kolat Rekula, or because of the Pasuk, Paseches Yodecho Maspia L'chol Chai Ratzah. So this Mizmor plays a very special part in our liturgy. We say it every single day, Ashrei, for those reasons. But the Mizmor, this Maimon Chazal really has a much deeper meaning. And what it means is, anyone that says, don't take the words Tehillah LeDavid literally. He says the Mizmor that begins with Tehillah LeDavid. That particular Mizmor, if you'll say it, B'chol Yoim, that Mizmor, Tehillah LeDavid, Aramim Chalakai HaMelech Baruch Hashem Chol Yilam Vo'ed, B'chol Yom Avarecheka, that, oh, okay, that's true, but it's much deeper. What it means on a deeper level, anyone that lives a life of David, that lives Tehillah every single day of his life, that's a person that's Muftach Lo Shehu Ben Olam Haba. This whole Sefer is Tehillah LeDavid. It's not one particular mizmah that you say at 1:15 Ashrei, at 5 o'clock you go to Mincha, 5:30 Ashrei Yoshevisa. It doesn't mean, oh, that you say that mizmah. Kol Ha'omer Tehillah LeDavid, and to anyone that expresses himself the way David expressed himself, B'chol Yoim, every single event in David's life, everything that happened to him in his life, B'chol Yoim, he expressed himself to Hashem. He gave Hashem Tehillah, praise, Shevach V'Hoidah, and every day it came out differently. Some days he said Mizmor Gimel, some days he said Mizmor Dal, some days he says Mizmor Chof. Some days he said, Mizmor Kuf Mem Aleph. David, every single day he lived and he channeled his life experience into a Tehillah. Tehillah LeDavid. Kol Ha'omer, Tehillah LeDavid. Any person that connects himself to David and behaves in his ways and looks into this world and lives a life of using events and taking those events and channeling them to say Tehillah to Hashem like David, this is a Ben Olam Haba. Or just coming to Mincha every day and saying, just moving your lips three times a day, that's going to bring you to Olam Haba. We know that's not true. That's not the way it goes. We know there has to be some depth. That's what Tehillah is. Tehillah is a diary of a Ben Olam Haba. It's the diary of a person who every single day took every experience in his life and expressed himself to Hashem, expressed his frustrations, expressed his joy, expressed his hope, his aspirations, his success and failures. Every single day he expressed himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This Sefer is a diary. It is a record of what it means to give Tehillah LaHashem B'chol Yoim. And every person that follows in the model of David HaMelech, this is a Ben Olam Haba. And just to give also the number, how many Mizmorim are there? So in our edition, we have 150. That's not what it says in the Gemara. The Gemara says there are 147. Who lived to the age of 147? Yaakov, right? Yaakov Avinu? He lived to the age of 147. Each Mizmor corresponds to a year in the life of Yaakov Avinu. No, Yaakov Avinu, you understand, it's also...
Gemara says that at each Mizmor Kasher?
Yeah, I believe... Gemara says... I believe so. I think so. I don't know. I don't know. L'moy l'shoyn ch'loy mar eni yodea. The Chazal say, certainly, it's not in the Gemara, it's the Mepharshim, they say, they make the parallel 147. It's the Gemara says there are 147 Mizmorim, and there are 147 years in life Yaakov Avinu. And that fits very well with what we said in the beginning, that the whole Tehillim corresponds to Moshe Taras Moshe. Yaakov Avinu was the Talmud, the Kol Yom Gemat. From all of the Avos, Avruch, the different parallels. They are the Avos, and there is Moshe. Klal Yisrael is, you break it down into two parts. Avos, the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and then there is the Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, the world didn't exist. There's after Matan Torah, when the world started. If the world first started after Matan Torah, so why do we take into consideration Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Because we do. There are two different dimensions. Which, where in the dimension of the Avos is the Torah? Yaakov, Yoishev, the sixth parasha. The Yaakov, Ish, Tom, Yoishev, Oholim. It doesn't say anywhere that Avraham was Yoishev, Oholim, learning in this measure. It doesn't say anywhere that Yitzchak. It says in the Pasuk, the Yaakov, Ish, Tom, Yoishev, Oholim. Titin MS li Yaakov. MS is Torah. So again, there's that parallel that when David HaMelech is writing to Hillel, he is connecting to Moshe Rabbeinu. And through his connection to Moshe Rabbeinu, he's also dragging in Yaakov Avinu from the Avos. He's also loyal to the Avos. Which one of the Avos? The Avos that most connects to Torah Moshe. Yaakov, who was 147 years old when there was life. Now, why then do we have 150? So for some reason, we have taken some of the Mizmorim and we broke them into two. Why do we break into two? Good question. Which ones do we break into? So everyone agrees on one thing, at least this everyone agrees to, is that the first two Mizmorim were originally one Mizmor. That is a given. Why is that a given? The first two originally one Mizmor, because Chazal say any Mizmor that begins with Ashrei and ends with Ashrei is one Mizmor. The first Mizmor begins with Ashrei. Ashrei ho'ish asher lo holach batzas rishoim, and the end of Mizmor Beis concludes with Ashrei. Ashrei kol choisei roi. Fortunate or praiseworthy are all those that have faith. All those that have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So any Mizmor that begins with Ashrei, ends with Ashrei, is considered one Mizmor. So why then was it broken up into two? Good question. And this, I once came across, I have to mention, we're going to discuss this, and we'll get there, is Mordechai Kornfeld. He talks about this. The reason why I tell you this is because Rosh Chodesh is on the way. Rosh Chodesh is coming up. And Rosh Chodesh, we only say what we call Chatzi Halal. It's not Chatzi Halal, it's more like 80% of Halal. So what do? We just, two of the Mizmorim, now you'll say, but what do you mean? We skip. So when we skip, in our Sidurim, we have to analyze, this is a very fascinating, I'm not going to say, because I'm going to say it wrong, I have to go review, but in those Mizmorim, are those really, really originally one Mizmor? And we're only saying it half, or were they originally two Mizmorim? Okay, this gets into the number game. We're going to try, I guess at some point, to play the number game in Tehillim. How did Tehillim go from 147, what it says in Chazal, to 150? Obviously, someone came along, and someone took a knife and sliced Mizmorim into two. The first one, that's for sure. Aleph, 1 and 2 for sure was originally one Mizmor. Zafer Shugumar, Chazal. Why do we break it into two? Good question. I guess it's a nice Hakdama. It's an introduction to the entire Sefer, so we split that part off. It's Hakdama. But which are the other ones in? That's not so simple. That's not so clear. Where are the other two Mizmorim that were split into two to make it from 147 to 150? And there's a lot of chokhmah, insight into analyzing how it got from 147 to 150. So we have a number game as well here. Okay, so right now the time is up. Mir Shem and I planned, I prepared today, but obviously we didn't do anything today, just a little Hagdama. But Mir Hashem tomorrow, we said this is how I envision it. Obviously we'll see how it goes. I would like to do every single Rashi. I think that's very essential. Every single Rashi we should learn inside. We should read the Pesukim and we do every Rashi. Everything else, halavai, I should be diligent in preparing. We're going to select, be very selective in what we're going to learn, and try to not spend more than a day or two on each mizmar. Like for example, today what I wanted to do today is basically go to the Rashi and then read. And the Malbim, I found the Malbim to be very satisfying. Not the whole Malbim. The Malbim breaks down this person, the Ashrei Ho'ish, into seven parts. There are seven dimensions. And not even to read the whole Malbim, just to read, it goes through Allah, but just to jump around and to show the basic seven elements of this person and how he is compared to a tree. And then there's a little shtickle radak I want to do. And the Maimori Chazal are very, very satisfying, at least to me. So I think the Maimori Chazal, because you know why the Maimori Chazal are very satisfying? Because the Maimori Chazal really capture all the other Mefarshim. Because many of the other Mefarshim, they just quote the Maimori Chazal, and they say something. So we don't have to do all the little Mefarshim. If we would spend time on the Likutei Shas, not every single one, but that really captures a major, major chunk of all the other Mefarshim. We're not going to do, we're just going to do the Rashis, and we're going to probably do much of the Maimori Chazal inside, and everything else, just little snippets here and there. And I have some other very interesting svarim that, you know, they have Mamloes, and they have Rav Chaim Kanievsky, a very nice sefer that they put from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, some really, really nice things. And the art scroll also, they have the art scroll, the English edition. And they, I mean, there's infinite number of svarim. We're talking about the basic popular ones. So that's how B'li Neder we're going to try. Yeah.
You mentioned in your introduction that a lot of, you said Afroini put in the chapters.
Yes.
Those chapters are usually put in by the printer, has a guy sitting doing research to put notes. Like Rashi has also referred
to the Dibur Hamaskel.
Yeah, but it wasn't done. They put in the half of the pasuk.
Yeah.
They have it in the Gemara too. Sometimes.
No, Rashi put in the Dibur Hamaskel.
In the Gemara, sometimes it also refers to pasuk.
The first person to use a Dibur Hamaskel was Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel was the first person to write a commentary, and before he wrote what he wanted to say, he took a word or two of the pasuk or of the Gemara. He took it, and on that he put a period, and then he wrote his commentary. Rabbeinu Chananel, he was the trendsetter. He was the one who invented. Rashi came later.
Rashi
I believe Rashi did. I think Rashi copied Rabbeinu Chananel.
There's a famous Rashi in Sanhedrin in Ben Sora Mora. The Divrei Hamaskel is not in the Gemara.
Right, the Megirsa. Rashi is a very. Rashi spent an enormous amount of time studying Girsois. Rashi, when he went in Magnus, they had they had libraries of old manuscripts. Rashi spent an enormous amount of time analyzing the Girsois, because the Girsois, there was a lot of confusion. What was the correct Girsa? Rabbeinu Chananel was the one who invented the Dibur Hamaskel. Rabbeinu Chananel, you can't even get to appreciate how influential he was in so many respects. They say that if a Shver Rambam, this is what they say in Yeshiva, if you have a Rambam, you're in a Rambam. And like everything the Rambam says, it's very difficult. It's not, doesn't fit what it says. But tomorrow, this, that, look in Rabbeinu Chananel on the Sugya, and you guaranteed you will figure out what the Rambam meant. The Rambam was heavily influenced by Rabbeinu Chananel, his understanding of the Sugya. The few words of Rabbeinu Chananel answer all the questions. All right, we're going to take a very short break. That's a Hagdama. Tomorrow we're going to jump right into the text, B'li Neder. And after the break, I want to learn about Vayisroitzu Habonim B'kirba. Now, before that, is Yitzchak and Rivka, they sat or stood on opposite sides of the room, and they were mispala. Where was the mechitza? That's not the topic, but we'll talk about that. Okay, we'll be back in a second. We'll be back in a few moments.
I just want to say thank you to everyone who came.